You are listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff.
Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold.
And welcome to the Alouettes Flight Deck podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football, sponsored by Bad Monkey Popcorn. I am Tim Capper along with Cliffy D. Hey, you know what? If only the game last week had the snow that they got in Calgary today, I don't think you and I would be, I'm sure we still would be, but it would have been a hell of a lot better game. at least just watching, you know, come on. It's Canadian football and it would have been in September in the snow.
A snowy football game in September would have to be one of the most CFL things ever.
Ever. By the way, speaking of Bad Monkey Popcorn, I mentioned it off air, but I didn't mention it on air. I saw a huge Bad Monkey Popcorn billboard in the western part of Montreal in between Côte Saint-Luke Road, where it turns into the Boulevard, and I think it is Van Horn. Is it Van Horn? Is that too far west? I know if you go as far as Blue Bonnets, then you're fine. It's in between there. That the Bad Monkey. It's closer to Queen Mary, but you see a huge Bad Monkey Popcorn billboard. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I can't say if it's because of the LOS Flight Deck and everybody tuning in, but I mean, we'll take the credit if it's there.
Maybe our logo is really, really tiny on the ad. We just can't see it.
Telling you, we got to get bumper stickers.
Yeah, that's right. Some of the things. My honor student was on the Bad Monkey Popcorn ad billboard. my son, the podcast host, went to Bad Monkey Popcorn U. It's a great.
My podcast appeared on a billboard, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt.
Yes. So, the game was garbage, dude. It just seems to be getting, and it's funny. You know, I said, you know, we saw with the 17-point spread that was put out, and I thought there was no way. Yes, there was way.
There was so way.
And I had to look it up. It got some, you know, they given up 49 points after three quarters. And I said, there's no way it's happened before. It had. So I said, okay, well, thank God. Thank God the team hadn't done it before. You know, they given up 49 plus points after three quarters three times. And it was the third time.
But Tim, I really wish we had odds. I wonder if there was any odds of, will the Alouettes hold a lead? Because they actually held a lead in this game, if you can believe
it. Yeah, I know. And you and I went back and forth about this. Okay, yes. So the Alouettes did break their streak. Their seven-week streak, team record. No, it was six because they were one away from was it six or seven? What was it? Anyways, it was a streak. And it was six. And they were one away from tying the league record of most consecutive first quarters without a score, without a point. And on the opening kickoff, Rouge. Who would have thought?
I was excited. Finally, it took this long, but the Alouettes were able to put points on the board in the first quarter. Now, we would have liked more than just one, but it's something.
Yeah.
One's better than zero, last time I checked.
Yes, but as you said, not a touchdown.
not a field goal. No, it was a rouge.
Hey, you know me. Hold on, gotta find it because I put it out. So Cliff, so we broke that streak. Yes, woohoo! So the Alouettes haven't scored here, and we did this back. I think back when they're having the problems. Was it 2 or 3 years ago when Crompton was quarterback? Before we first started winning, So the Alouettes, Cliff, have not scored an offensive first quarter touchdown in 108 minutes and 43 seconds.
Yeah. It's ugly.
Now, to be fair, they actually did score a touchdown in the first half. They broke their streak. So when they scored their first half touchdown in, I think it was Charles Sutton, he scored the touchdown. Only touchdown. In the second quarter, they had just scored their first half touchdown, Cliff, in 149 minutes and 54 seconds. I think that was rivaling that record. I think it was a lot longer. I think it was 2014. It was either 2014, 2015. I think it was 2014 when they had a streak that was going back that long also. It was something stupid. I have to go back and check my Twitter feed. But a lot of quotes came out. And we're going to talk about this because, by the way, we had a great guest this week. He is the color commentator for the Alouettes on their English radio, broadcaster, and former Alouette, Davis Sanchez. But that'll be a couple more minutes. But I'm just trying to be so positive here, dude.
This is where we find ourselves right now. I think only the most foolhardy of people would have thought that Montreal would have had a fighting chance going into Calgary, where they, again, haven't lost since 2015. And I kind of joked about it, too. I said, just in case you had just a little bit of hope that the Alouettes would win this game, Drew Willey on the radio in an interview said that the team had, wait for it,
oh no,
a good week of practice.
Oh, dear Lord. There's the curse right there.
I mean, that was just right there, the cherry on top. And I even said, man, the Alouettes had 59 points hung up on them after a quote-unquote good week of practice. I'd hate to imagine what the score would have been if they had a bad week at practice. These are dark days, folks. We try so hard to find positives and things, and this team, by and large, have they quit? This is, I think, one of the big questions, especially after the game, is a lot of people are asking, have these Alouettes thrown in the towel? Because they sure played like they did. There's no question about that. I mean, 59 points. I mean, I don't care if it is Calgary. I don't care if they're at McMahon Stadium. You still got to have a bit of pride in what you do. And even if you go in knowing that, okay, we're probably going to lose this game. Okay, fine. But at least it could still be a hard-fought effort. And this truly wasn't a hard-fought effort. This was the usual comedy of errors that we've been seeing over and over and over again, at least for the past 3 weeks since Kavis Reid took over as head coach of this team. It's kind of sad, really. I mean, I can't even be mad anymore. I think we're now reaching that dangerous level of apathy where you're just sort of like, oh, yeah, the Wits. Yeah. And it's unfortunate because I want so badly to be positive about things. But, I mean, you see the stuff online, and, like, this team just has become the whipping boy for anyone with a Twitter account that just wants to toss another bag on the dumpster fire. But what can we do at this point? I mean, it is what it is right now.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I went back and looked. I had to. August 9th, 2014, this is my tweet. So you know how bad it was in 2014.
It was pretty bad.
This is my quote. My final tally of the Alouettes' offensive touchdown scoring drought. No TDs in 190 minutes and 33 seconds. A staggering 53 possessions.
Oof.
That's how bad it was. And we were at 140 for the first half. Just under 150. What? Now, we'll talk about quite a bit with Davis, and it's just an amazing conversation that we had with him, that we brought up with him. A very well-spoken guy when it comes to – and the dude knows quite a bit. But it's – I don't want to get too much into it, but it's how much more can Alouettes fans take? Because, you know, it did start over the weekend, the Fire Kavis hashtags. Is this a time that where we – everybody from players to coaches – to GMs have to be looked at and say, nothing is safe going into next season. If we have to change GMs again, who has CFL experience will do it, but it has to be done. You know what it has to be done, Cliff? If it is done, it has to be done the day after the Alouettes season, 2017 season finishes. That's when it has to start. That's when the firings have to be announced, and that's when the new start. That's when everything has to start right there and then.
Yeah, and I think you just can't half-ass it. I mean, if you're going to clean house, you have to clean house. And if that means you have to get rid of people that you like, people that you get along with really well, and dare I say, legends who happen to pretend to be coaches, then so be it. I think at this point, I think the ownership group has to take a long look at things, and they can't be happy. I mean, I want to believe that they feel the way that fans and supporters do, is that this is completely unacceptable. We were promised a whole bunch of good stuff, and rent's due. Let's put it that way. Okay. The rent is due, and they don't have any money in the bank. So they've any goodwill, any sort of good karma, anything that they've built up as far as positive, it's been spent. There's nothing left. So, I mean, at this point, I would say, I mean, do you give Kavis Reed a chance and let him hire his people, or has ownership looked at and said, oh no, this is not going to do it, and we just got to clean house? And like I said, you have to clean house. You can't just say, well, we kind of like this guy as a coach and we think he could be good. And again, we can't make Anthony Calvillo mad. So we got to keep him on and hope and pray that whoever we want,
okay, to be fair,
keep him on.
And I get what you're saying, by the way, and this is my honest opinion. I, you know, everybody loves AC, and I think no matter, as long as the Wettinals have ownership of the Montreal Alouettes, there will be a job of some sort for Anthony Calvillo. He will be on the payroll, whether it is a coach, whether it is in the head front office or something. He will always be with the team.
And by and large, I'm okay with that. And again, don't get me wrong, I am and always will be an Anthony Calvillo fan. But to see, like, just he's just been ruined as far as coaching goes. And you can blame any number of people for that. To me, it just seems like if he's really truly serious about coaching, then let him coach somewhere else. Learn how to be a coach. Let him really learn without the pressure. And that's the thing. I can't help but wonder if that's really why AC hasn't been the coach that some people have expected him to be. Is it truly because he doesn't know what he's doing, or is it because he puts so much pressure on himself to be as good of a coach as he was a football player, and the pressure's way too much? And I think there's too much of an expectation here in Montreal for AC to be the AC as a coach that he was as a player, and it doesn't always translate. Once again, take a look. Wayne Gretzky, head coach. That didn't work out. Is that because Wayne Gretzky is a bad person? No. It's just that as great of a player as he was, he just didn't know how to coach. And I really think that's what it comes down to with AC, is that he's an absolutely awesome player. He has tons of experience that he can give any young quarterback, at least, or any football player, really, when you think about it. But I just think his coaching career has just been just flat out ruined from day one. Like, it's just been one misstep after another. And even when I've held a hope that if you just bring him back to just being a quarterback's coach, even that hasn't worked out, because look at the quarterbacks that this team has had since he's been quote unquote quarterback coach. It hasn't looked great. Is that a reflection on the quarterbacks, or is that a reflection on the coach? Because we expect coaches to make players better. That's their job. That's what coaching is, essentially.
Yeah.
And maybe AC just doesn't have it. And will he ever have it? Maybe one day. But I think as long as he's a member of this organization, as a member of the coaching staff, I think he's just going to put more undue pressure on himself, and the results are just going to be disastrous. I really think that if AC is truly, truly serious about being a head coach, okay, fine. Or a coach in general, fine. But you can't do it here. This is not a training ground. Montrealers are not paying tickets to go see a football game to watch you either quote-unquote pretend to be a coach or try to be a coach. It doesn't work that way. This is not an internship here. I mean, we expect professional football. We keep telling everybody this is professional football. Professional football would mean you'd hire the best possible coaches, not just the guys that we like or the guys that have been legends when they were players once upon a time. It doesn't work that way. You take a look at the players, the former players that became coaches, like Dave Dickinson and Jason Moss, for example. both were pretty good quarterbacks in their day. Not AC good, but they were pretty good quarterbacks. But they didn't jump right away to head coach or offensive coordinator. They started out as offensive or quarterbacks coach or receivers coach, and they built themselves up slowly but surely. They weren't fast-tracked within a year to offensive coordinator. Like, no wonder it didn't work. And you take a look at the results now. Jason Moss, Dave Dickinson, both are head coaches. Both are doing extremely well, all things considered. Whereas AC, not doing so well. And I really think it comes down to that, is the fact that he hasn't been given the chance to properly become a coach and learn how to coach.
Yeah, and I think a good thing is, a good example, by the way, that I think we could use is Brian Chu, former Montreal Alouettes center. Everybody remembers him. He went and he coached for the Concordia Stingers. And then being there for an next period of time, he made the jump to the CFL with Toronto. And look where he is now.
Absolutely. That's a great example right there. And you know what? Nobody took a look at him and said, well, he's been an Alouette his whole life. Let's make him automatically the offensive line coach.
Maybe he should. Maybe AC should hone his skills, maybe a little bit with the Redmen, if he can get on the Redmen, or maybe with the Stingers. It's an option. But
it wouldn't be a bad thing. I mean, no one would ever look at it as a demotion. Even if he went down to, say, like the high school or Cégep level, if it was strictly just so that he could learn how to truly be a coach and really help mentor kids and really help mentor, or not kids, but young men.
Yeah.
If it really is a matter of learning how to be a coach for them and how to develop yourself before you become a professional coach, I'd be all for it. No one's going to look down on him for it. No one's going to think anything bad otherwise. To me, I think that would have been a much better way for AC to prove that he can be a coach, rather than everybody just assuming that, oh, well, you're AC, you're the greatest quarterback this league has ever known. Of course you're going to be an amazing coach. Here you go. Here's the thing. Oh, and drop a playbook, even though you've never done that in your life, and you never called plays, never were successful or felt comfortable calling plays when you were a quarterback for the Montreal Alouettes. No, we could totally trust you with designing a playbook. I mean, it's so unfair. I really think that this organization has really done a disservice for Anthony Calvillo, the coach. They've taken great care of him as a player and as a legend, but you take a look at him as a coach and it's just been atrocious.
Just
the way he's been treated.
Now look at what happened to this team, and we'll move on and we'll get to the interview. You know, this team has given up, I think, over 100 yards rushing the last three games, and it's just not just over 100. It's been well over 100. I guess the defense itself didn't have anything to do with Noel Thorpe. Because giving up so many yards, I mean, this team used, I mean, the Owls have always been a half decent team when it comes to the run, and their defense has always been bend, not break. But just the past three games, they just haven't been able to stop anybody.
No, they're just getting blown up, and not just by really good offensive teams like what Calgary is, but I mean, Toronto, Ottawa, whose offense is, I'll say, good, not great, not elite, but good.
Right.
And even then, I think I'm being a little generous. I'd say that they're very much middle of the road, leaning towards good. And they've been able to hang 30-plus points on the Alouettes. So what does that say about the defense? I get that Noel Thorpe may not have been the most popular guy, and I know he can rub a lot of people the wrong way, but you know what? If you listen to him, he made you a defensive stud. I mean, you look at the guys that are on this team. Like, these guys got better when Noel Thorpe was coaching. I think maybe the message got lost. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe it really is injuries taking its toll. Maybe it is trying to slot in too many rookies, thinking that you can your system works so well that you can pretty much put player X in and not skip a beat. I can't really speak to that, but you take a look at what things are like now without Noel Thorpe, and it is scary. I've never seen this defense look so porous in, it's been a long time. I mean, well before Noel Thorpe came in, I haven't seen the defense look this just porous, really. There's no other way to describe it.
Yeah. You know what's bad, by the way? When Calgary, we thought, had scored their 62nd point late in the fourth quarter, I was actually rooting for it. You know what's bad? When I wanted Calgary, if they were to hit the extra point, the Alouettes would have tied their team record for most points given up in a game in their history. But it didn't occur, obviously, because it was called back because of a penalty. But still, the Alouettes gave up the points that they did. It was the third highest in team history. Third highest in team history.
Yeah. And sure enough, it's all about the consequences. Yeah. It's all about the dumpster fire. It's all about all the awful things that you see on Twitter about this team. And there comes a point where it's like, well, I really can't defend.
No, I can't. The now, team. Let's go and we'll move on here because there was one positive. And sure, it was during garbage time. And you've talked about him before, too. Talking about him already a little bit this year is how did Matt Schultz look? I think he looked pretty – I said it may have been in garbage time, but still. He still went 8 of 10 for 75 yards. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was – I think that was one of the positives for the team this week.
There's no question. I mean,
next to EJ, by the way, next to EJ, finally getting some getting and catching some passes, you know, 6 receptions on 8 targets for 73 yards.
No, that's it. And again, Tyrell Sutton, we already know, is not going to quit on this team. I mean, he's got that fire in him and you can't extinguish it. That's just the way he is. That's just his personality. Yeah. And you're not going to stop a Tyrell Sutton when he's determined like that. And you can see, like, he may have probably felt like he was on an island, really, is the way he was playing. But he's not going to give up on this team no matter what. And you can't help but admire just the way he attacks every game like that. But with Matt Schultz, yeah, I'm glad he finally got some reps. I mean, is he going to be the quarterback of the future? Because I'll tell you right now, it's not going to be Darian Durant. It's not going to be Drew Willey. Could it be this young man? Who's to say? I mean, how many times have we seen guys
come out of the woodwork? We all the time in the CFL, they just come out of the woodwork and they're like, and we're like, holy crap! AC is a good example. He lingered in the CFL for what, 2-3 years, and look what he became. So it's possible. It is possible.
Yeah. I mean, you take a look at 2012. Where was Bo Levi Mitchell? He was third string for the Calgary Stampeders. Yeah. These guys, you truly never know. And sometimes all they need is that opportunity to get onto the field and see what they can do. And we finally got to see that with Matthew Schultz. Whether he could be the real deal or not, only time is going to tell. It really depends on how much playing time he gets and, God help it, coaching.
You know what? And maybe we can look into our crystal ball and we see finally we see one of those very amusing headlines from Herb Zerkowski, and I can see it now, big bold letters across the front, the online on the Gazette and on the print edition if they still have one. Then it says, "Holy Schultz leads Alouettes to win."
If that happens, I really hope Davis Sanchez, who first coined the Holy Schultz term, I hope he takes Herb to the bank.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess we'll leave it. We'll leave it at that. And I guess as I said, we can only hit the team so hard, like we had done for since the entire streak has been in existence. You know, what better person to talk about the Alouettes and the current struggles that they're having in this season is somebody who not only used to play for them, won a Grey Cup with them, but is currently the color commentator for the Montreal Alouettes. We have a gentleman who won not only one, not only two, but 3 Grey Cups in the CFL in his career, Mr. Davis Sanchez. Welcome, sir.
That's quite the intro, but thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, guys. Long overdue. I listen, I follow, and it's good to get on with you guys. Obviously, big Al supporters, and it's tough times for all of us. So maybe we can do a kumbaya and a big hug some kind of time.
I think this could very well be a very good therapy session for everyone who's a part of Alouettes Nation, whether it's as a broadcaster or just a flag waving fan. I think this is a good chance for us to sort of come together. Let's talk about what's going on and let's see if we can't try to pick up the pieces here, if you will, because this past Friday's game was scary. I mean, going to at Calgary, it's almost a guarantee that the Alouettes are going to lose. So you sort of take that into consideration, but I don't think anyone thought it was going to be quite as ugly as it had been this past Friday. Davis, what are your thoughts on what you got to see firsthand there at McMahon Stadium?
This game in particular, I haven't, you know, I try not to look at this game after I kind of, you know, decompressed and I got, back to my hotel and talked about it with the people and did the post game. And I just decided kind of not to break this game down too deeply into what happened or didn't happen. Just for the fact of, You're not going to find anything good in this, and there's already been so much. It's been so, such a difficult month, and almost into 2 months now. I just don't need any more negativity with this. So, you know, I kind of put the season, piece the season together, and not too much in this game. The one thing someone said, which rang true, and I don't feel good about it, but it's the actual fact is the Stampeders backups beat the Alouette starters in the second half of the game.
It's true.
It's just so hard to watch. I mean, you know, we're trying to find some positive to do, but all you can really do is look at the negatives themselves. I mean, Davis, I mean, look at the Owls, luckily, I guess it's a good thing. I mean, they didn't set the all-time team record for most points given up in a game because they became very close. They had so many points scored on by the third quarter alone. You know, when you go into the fourth quarter and you see that the Owls have already had 49 points scored on them, I mean, how are you and Rick able to just continue with the broadcast knowing that it is a long hill and there's luckily 15 minutes left in this game?
We're able to do it with Rick Moffitt. For those of you who don't know, he was the longtime play-by-play man for TSN Montreal and CJID, but he is the most positive gentleman you could find, and so Rick finds a way to keep it positive. So he's my help when it comes to that. You can only all the positivity he can give Rick all the credit for that.
Okay. But I mean, any time you're in your career, had you been down by 49 points after 30? I mean, sorry, after 45. I mean, what do you think that the whole team was feeling at that point?
Well, I mean, it worked for two different. It depends on, you know, when I look at this, I felt the one thing I kept saying during the broadcast was that I felt bad for the Kyrese Bears, the John Bowman, the Chip Cox. I felt bad for Luke Berdorder Jardin. I feel bad for those guys, for the veterans who have played in a lot of big games for this team and won a lot of big games and championships, and they had to be a part of this. And that's tough. You know, for the rooks, hey, just, you know what? It's part of the deal. You're getting your butt kicked. It's part of the learning curve. You got a lot of football ahead of you, and you take it. You know, you take it like a man. You take a butt whooping, and hopefully it makes you stronger, and hopefully it'll make. You know, I know this much. I didn't win a Grey Cup, you know, myself. I won in Edmonton in 2005, but I was only there for that one season, mm-hmm. and I was injured. I only played, I think, six games, and then I tore my groin, so I was out. So I didn't win a Grey Cup until 2009 was the first one. I had lost two previously with the Owls before that time. So I know that I was in my 10th year of playing before I won a Grey Cup. So, I mean, I know how sweet that was and how good it felt because of all the, you know, the tough times that I went through, you know, previously. It made that much sweeter. So, you know, from that regard, it's, you know, hopefully that you go through those growing pains and I'd come out on the other end a better player and a better man, a better teammate.
Now, one thing that Chip Cox had said post-game, Davis, was that, and I'm paraphrasing here, what do you expect when you get rid of your head coach and your defensive coordinator? Where do you sort of take those comments? Is it just frustration on Chip's part because of how things are going, or is it sort of like a veiled shot at the organization to say that, listen, you got rid of the people that we thought we would, the people that we would stand behind, and the people you've got in place right now, maybe we're not so willing to stand behind it. What do you take out of Chip comments from that?
I did see that. Can you clarify when I did see that posted, but I'm not sure when I heard that. Can you clarify when that was said?
Pretty much it was post game. They said that, like, I don't know if it was to one of the reporters or not, but it was, and I'm sort of paraphrasing when I say, yeah, what Chip's saying, like, yeah, more or less, that's how it came across, was, how do you expect us to play when these guys that you had in place before are no longer with the team? So right. I guess it's sort of
this was said after to that this week's game. That's when it was said. That's correct.
Correct. Yeah.
Right, yeah. I did see that, and I don't know how to take that. I'd have to ask Chip, and I'm sure I will ask Chip when I see him next week. But you know, initially I would think without anything looking into it further, I would say he's saying that he didn't like the fact that his DC's gone and his head coach is gone. To be honest, that would be my take, and that doesn't mean that's the case. Maybe he's, and also maybe he's just stating the facts. Anyone that loses their DC and their head coach, actually not even their DC and their head coach, their OC, their head coach, and their DC. You lose those guys at this point in the season, it's tough to win. So maybe he could one of two things. He's stating disapproval of the move, which I don't think so. Or he's stating the obvious fact of, hey, we're missing our offensive coordinator, our defense coordinator, and our head coach. And at this point in the season, it's pretty tough to put in new systems or change systems and win football games. Because remember, Jock's the OC as well, right?
That's right.
Yeah, very much so.
Everyone talks about the, you know, the fact that DC is gone and the head coach, but really, you lose both sides of the ball. You lose your play callers and people who built the system on both sides of the ball. That's tough.
We're talking about the veterans and stuff like that. That you're feeling bad for, which I agree with you. Another comment that came after the game that was in the story by Herb Zerkowski in the Gazette by John Bowman. He goes, "It's not the fact that we're losing seven in a row. Is that we're losing seven in a row by 25 points every game? It seems like a blowout. It seems like a lot of people don't care, but that's just how I feel." Any comment?
Yeah, that's strong as well. And you know, just like we said, I mean, these vet guys. I feel bad for them, and that's, you know, John cares. I can look back 3 weeks ago when we were in BC, and John was between every snap, John was on the ground. He was dragging his arm. You could see something was wrong. This was before the diagnosed hand injury.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't have a cast on his hand, but that it had already been broken or whatever it is. Right? So, but he was playing through it, and you could see him just like every snap, just on his knee and then going to the sideline, and they're looking at it and back on the field. He's just a warrior. And you know, to see maybe other guys who you look at their body language and they're not Hall of Famers like John Bowman. They're not Alouette's all-time sack leaders like John Bowman. And they're, you know, laughing on the plane and giggling in the hallway, and maybe it doesn't mean as much to them. And that, you know, that's for John to point out by saying that. It's not for me to point out, because I'm not with the team on the plane. I don't see them off the field. I don't see them at practice very often. So if John's saying that, then that's, you know, John's earned the right to say those type of things. And usually if you hear someone say that, that's obviously a major problem in the locker room. That's division. When someone's calling, you know, their teammates out and their lack of effort. But at this point in the season, with just a few weeks remaining in this record, I think it's perfectly appropriate if that's what John feels he needs to do.
Now, you've had a chance to watch this team pretty much from day one as far as how they've gotten to this point here. Do you think there was any one particular instance where the wheels just started to fall off and it's just kind of gone downhill from there? Is there any
No question.
Is there any sort of
Winnipeg, 12 points, 2 minutes. That's when it all right there. At that point in time, I believe the Owls were 2-3 at that point. Cliffy, you could probably clarify that, but I think they were 2-3 at that point in time. And would have brought them to 500, and I believe given them the tie for first in the East, I believe. And I was feeling going into that game, when I saw the schedule, the first 5 weeks of the season, and he had four Western teams, it was just a tough start to the season. And I looked at the roster, and I said, oh man, this is going to be a tough start. Like, you have to get through this first month with, you know, keeping the fans engaged, and hopefully, you know, because there's been a lot of turmoil and a lot of things happened over the last couple of years. I just was hoping for the sake of this team and for all of us as fans and alumni and you know, media, everyone that's involved with this team, players. I just hope the front office people in particular, and as I say this, I name off these people because people, as you guys know people around the organization, whether it's an equipment guy, someone in the front office, mm-hmm. We all have, you know, these people all love the team and have, you know, it's part of their family, it's family. And so when the team's not doing well, it hurts everyone and it affects all of us, you know, as you go through your day-to-day life. But, so I saw that tough start and I said, oh man, just hope this team could get through. And then they got through and, you know, beat Calgary and I think we're 2-2 after four. But more of the story is that loss from then, I think that was obviously a game. You go into Winnipeg, beat a team who, if you look now, is probably the second best team in this league on paper. And now, you beat that team and you're the best team in the East. You're at top of the East. You're feeling pretty good about yourselves. All of a sudden, you lose that game. It's demoralizing. And you go on to lose the next, I don't know, 8 of 9 or 7 of 8 or whatever it may be. So I think that was the point, to make a long answer long. That was the point and of the season. No doubt about it.
Now, and you're right, by the way, at the time when they were 2-3 when they lost to Winnipeg and blew that, and then since then they've lost 7 of 8. They beat Toronto 21-9, and then from there the streak has started and continued. Let's try to look forward to the future, whether it be the last four games and then into the offseason, see if we can get what your thoughts are, Davis. You got the Thanksgiving Day game coming up versus Edmonton. Very interesting situation between these two. We don't have any information yet that have come from the league, but you got two teams coming into this game, one on a 7-game losing streak, one on a 6-game losing streak. What can you expect from these two teams? Because each of these two teams really have had their own issues, obviously, for streaks to go as long as they have so far this into this time of the year.
You know, we can expect one of these teams to break the losing streak.
Yeah, well, yes.
That's what we can expect, and that's a hot take right here from Davis.
Watch there be a tie, Davis. Watch there be a tie.
it's two teams who have lost a lot of games in the last 2 months, but one of these teams is still a team that with their talent level can still compete for the West, compete for the Grey Cup. I wouldn't count Edmonton out. I would actually still put Edmonton in my top four or five teams in this league right now, even though they've lost got 8 in a row now. So two teams trending the same direction, but with different aspirations and hopes at this point in time. And for the Owls, it's I'd like to see them, and this is, I think, where we'll we'll head to after this. But is start to move to the future now. Playoffs are slim to none, and it's now who's going to be a part of this team next year, and who that's here right now is going to quit. Let's check out some of the skill sets. So I would, if I'm Cavis Reed, I'm going to look at some of these guys and put them in situations where I want to find out, hey, if there's a halfback who has been playing in a lot of man coverage, I'm going to say, and I want to maybe move him into his own scheme next year a little bit. I'm not sure if he can play zone. I'm going to put him in that situation. If there's a lineman who's been playing tackle and he might move into a guard position next year, the way I want to, scheme my offensive line, I might move him in there. Things like that, just to kind of get an idea of who can do what as you move forward and look at your roster for next season.
Now, Cliff, just a follow-up, Cliff, before I let you take the next question. You said the word quit, Davis. Is that really the right word to use?
What was the context of saying quit?
You said some of the when we're talking about going into next season, you're talking looking at the players that were possibly going to be there, and you said some players may quit, some players may. It was a context.
Yeah, for sure. Some guys will. When I say quit, I don't mean they're going to pack up their lunch and go home, but they're going to shut it down. I mean, you quit. Guys quit in various forms. Some guys will stop working out. Some guys will stop, cut down the film study. Some guys will, when 4 o'clock bell rings and it's time in the practice, the 4.5 hours is over. Some guys will go right home and tune out away from tune football out. Some guys will try not to get injured in the last few games. Maybe they're a free agent after the season's over and they want to be healthy. I mean, there's a lot. When you're in this situation in this game, there's a lot of guys who will shut it down. And as a player, as a teammate, as a coach, as a personnel guy, I'm looking at those guys. I'm looking to see how they respond.
Okay, no, I just wanted to get the context. I was like, what? Okay.
guys will definitely quit. I mean, I'm not saying these guys will quit. But
right.
I mean, we see it in every sport and every league.
Now, it's funny that you talk about the future. As things stand right now, Cavis Reed is the general manager and, as right now, the head coach. He has stated in the past that he has no interest in being the head coach, and we know how that kind of works in Montreal, whether the GM and the head coach position are mutually exclusive. When it comes to the future, would you feel confident in keeping Cavis Reed for another year and seeing if he can sort of get himself out of this situation, or is it one of those situations? Are we now in a kind of situation where we just have to sort of cut bait and just start brand new all over again?
Yeah, that's difficult. That's a good question, and one that's going to be asked a lot in the next months and so. I think I'll hold off on a firm answer on that. I'll say this for sure, that until the end of the season is my reasoning for that. But I like Kavis, and I think he right now, I would lean towards him deserving a second chance, or not a second chance, but to continue what he's doing here. And that's because he's brought these guys in, a lot of them, but he's got to have the ability to pick his own head coach. And that's and I think that'll be key. If you want Kavis, if you want to give Kavis another year of GM, and because he's not going to be the head coach, so they say, you got to let him pick his head coach, and then and kind of go from there. And I think that's a big thing, because he didn't get to pick Jacques Chaplin, so it's not really fair to give Kavis this the full strikes on this, because he wasn't allowed to pick his. I know he says that Jacques was his choice, but it wasn't. And everyone knows that, and that's so. It's only fair to let the man, if you're going to give him a shot, let him do it his way. I think that's the call.
I know you said you wanted to hold off, but is there any possibility, if you can answer it, do you see how much of a turnover? I'm going to try to keep it vague. How much of a turnover do you think that this team will have going into the 2018 season?
Offensively, huge. Offensively, offensively, it's a major makeover. I think there's some pieces on that defense, some of the young guys on that defense that have proved to be capable of being players, in their years here. Because there's a lot of guys in first and second year on that defense, first, second, third year guys. There's a lot of guys playing a lot of valuable minutes on that defense,
mm-hmm.
and they've held their own. Think about how much they've been on the field, and they've held their own. And these are guys making, in the lower salary ranges too. So there's not a lot of money spent. That's another reason why the whole move with Northrop was kind of a bit of a, kind of a question mark for a lot of us, because there's not a lot of money spent on that defense, and they happen to, keep this team alive as long as they were on the field. They held their own. So because those young guys not making a lot of money and are guys who we can build on, I think the defense would stay pat and add a few pieces offensively. There's a lot of guys making money who aren't producing, a lot of them, and a lot of them don't even get talked about by the general media. Don't talk about a few of these guys. They're making a lot of money, or they're making money, and they're not doing anything. They're not producing. Those guys all have to go, and you got to find new guys who are going to earn the dollars they make and earn those salaries. Because if your top paid guys aren't producing, you have no chance to win this league.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, opinion on that? Is there? I mean, what else?
Well,
based on that, am I
think,
off?
I mean, no, I don't think so at all. Because I think the Alouettes, ever since AC went down, they've had an issue not only at quarterback. They need to find something. Yes, it was nice getting Durant this year, but it just, I don't know, something just doesn't seem right. We've seemed to be able to have the Alouettes have always been known for having very good wide receivers and having a very good wide receiver core. It's just a matter of, have they been utilized properly? Same thing with running backs. It's just a matter of, we need the guy to be able to throw it to them. The O-line has always been talked about, always been all starting Canadians. But it's, I don't know, it's, something needs to change. I mean, the defense has always held this team in check for the past couple of years, and it just seems that it's not really working anymore. And you'll know this too, Davis. You can only keep your defense on the field so long before you completely give out.
Yeah, no question. And that was a big part of the first half of the season. We saw a ton of that.
Yeah.
It's been like that for a couple of years now. Like I personally found that whoever the offensive coordinator is for the Alouettes, it's just been the same boring, unimaginative plays over and over again. Like there was a little glimmer of hope last season when Chaplin took over the play calling. It looked a little more interesting. Maybe it was because we had a Vernon Davis and he was a little bit more exciting. And maybe it was the fact that Montreal was pretty much out of it. So the hell with it. Let's just throw the ball down the field and see what happens. Whereas this year we sort of bought into the hope that, okay, based on what Chaplin was able to do the last six games of the season, give him a full 18, then it's going to be really exciting. And then we just get this bland, pedantic offense, and it's just not even close to the same. So I think that's where a lot of the frustration has to come from for Alouettes fans, is we've got all these talented players. We've got Darren Durant, who is by and large an elite quarterback, and he's simply not playing up to that level. So where was the disconnect? And I think that's what's really frustrating more than anything else, is how is it that we can have so many talented players, a coach that conceivably should have been able to drop some absolutely incredible plays, and we're stuck with this boring conservative offense? And I think that's really more frustrating than anything else. Like, and what's the answer for that? I don't know, and I don't think anyone else knows. As far as when it comes to the offensive woes for the Alouettes, I really think that's really what it came down to, is that no original play calling, nothing that screams exciting, taking advantage of the weapons that you have at your disposal and making stuff happen, because we really haven't seen a whole heck of a lot of stuff happen, especially since that game in Winnipeg. I think that was Durant's best game, but since then, nothing. It's just been the same crap over and over again.
Cliffy, you mentioned talented player. You mentioned Darian being an elite quarterback. You mentioned talented wide receivers. What is your measuring stick, for that? What's your measuring stick for Darian, that Darian's an elite quarterback, and your measuring stick that the receivers are talented?
I think it's the numbers, really. I've seen what Darian Durant was able to do in Saskatchewan. Like, the last couple of years, yeah, we were injury plagued, so that kind of skews things a little bit. But at the end of the day, Darian Durant is, for the most part, a very good quarterback, or at least he should still be a very good quarterback. The fact that he was able to drop off like he did this year is, I still think it's mind-boggling, quite frankly. And as far as the receivers go, I mean, you got guys like Ernest Jackson, who last year won a Grey Cup, didn't drop a single pass last year. You've got BJ Cunningham, who I strongly believe is going to be a superstar in this league for years to come. Nick Lewis, who, again, needs no fluffing up at all. I mean, you know exactly what you're getting with him. Like, these are truly talented receivers. And the fact that Durant, who typically has a slow start and has trouble connecting with receivers over time, the fact that he hasn't been able to get over this mental block and really truly connect with these guys, to me, it's baffling.
Yeah. And I don't think you're alone. I just, the one thing that I hear this quite often, and this goes for every position group and every team, and it's we have good defensive backs, we have good wide receivers, we have a good quarterback, our defensive line is good. Well, you know, the only way that you can really determine how good a group is to put them up against other groups and then say, okay, whose group is better? You know, like, if you say your quarterback is good, okay, well, is Darian better than Matt Nichols? Is Darian better than Kevin Glenn? Is Darian better than Trevor Harris? Is he better than Ricky Ray? Is he better than Travis Lule? Is he better than Bo Levi Mitchell? And BJ Cunningham, is he better than Marky Michelle? Is he better than, Darius Bowman? Is he better than Manny Arsenault? Is he better than Chris Williams? And that's how you have to, and that's, you don't have, but that's how, when I look at these things, these are the questions that guys have to ask is, are they better than the other guys around the league? And in some cases, the guys I just mentioned, yes, our guys are better. In other cases, no, they're not. And so I think that's really, just to say that our guys are good, that's not enough. It's got to mean, are they good now? Not that they used to be good. Are they good now? And are they better than, when you line up your wide receiver group or your defensive back group or your offensive line, is it better than the other guys, other groups around the league? And that's when I look at this Al's roster, I don't think there's many positions where I think the Al's group is better as a group than many other teams.
That's fair. And I think what Cliff and I were doing at the beginning of the season, I think we've mentioned this before, Cliff, is that, and it goes to what you're saying too, Davis, is that you can look at a 10, and you mentioned it too earlier, a team can look good on paper, but the problem is if they can't show that they're better than they are on paper, then that's all you have. You're just as good as you are on paper.
I'm a big, there's no doubt about it, and I'm a big BJ Cunningham fan as well. Cliffy, as you are, I don't know about superstar, but I think he can be an elite guy. He shows flashes of that, and I think I would force feed. There's an example of someone I talked about earlier on, was having, seeing what guys are capable of doing. That's one of the guys who I want to see what BJ Cunningham can do. And what I mean by that is I might just force feed the ball to him. If he's one-on-one, I might just go to him and say, hey, I have these six plays that are for BJ, and they're all out of different formations. And if BJ's one-on-one, we're going to you and see if he can get off. Because I think that if he's involved, I think he's very good. And when he's not involved, he seems to just to kind of disappear. So there's a perfect example of kind of what I was talking about earlier. And that would be, because I have question marks about him. Same with Tyquan Underwood. I have question marks about him too. I think he shows, and when I have a question mark, it's because I think they're good. I think they're talented. So why are they not, why is the production not up there at times? Why do they disappear at times?
And again, like, to your point, I was seeing a lot of that earlier this year. Like, I even thought, okay, everybody's going to be respecting Ernest Jackson. They're going to be giving him double coverage and all that, which is, I have come to expect that. In which case, that means BJ is going to be wide open. And there were a few times where Durant was finding Cunningham for touchdowns, or at least moving the ball downfield. And I thought, this is great. This is exactly what I expected out of BJ Cunningham to be able to do. And when he was called, when his number was called upon, he stepped up. But in the past few weeks, it seems like he's just been a ghost. And that's, I think, through no fault of his own. I just honestly think sometimes that Anthony Calvillo has forgotten that he has a BJ Cunningham. They're trying to force a square peg into a round hole when it comes to that Durant-Jackson connection. And it's just not happening. So why not spread things out? And like, now I think we're starting to see a little bit of that. I think we got a glimpse of it this past Friday. But the past few games, it's just been a whole lot of nothing when it comes to Cunningham. Like, there's been trying to force things with Jackson, and again, I get it, because again, you went out and got him. Like, these were your two premier free agent acquisitions, so of course you got to try and make that work. But sometimes it doesn't always work, and in which case then you fall back and you go for a BJ Cunningham or Tyquan Underwood or even a Sam Jaguar. And it, to me, it just seems like, why haven't you been trying to do this more often? That's the frustrating part too, because yeah, he's only as good as what his players around him are going to make him. So it's, yeah, I get what you're saying as well. I would just think that there could be a little bit more. And I could also say the same thing to Cunningham as well, is that maybe make himself a little bit more vocal, make himself a little more available as well.
I agree.
Do you think there's anybody that you've noticed up in the booth that's being somebody that is being underutilized, Davis, this season?
Well, from the offensive standpoint, I would say everybody from the offense. But yeah, I mean, Ernest through the first half of the season, I would say that Ernest Jackson was being underutilized. He was being, you know, put in at a wide receiver. This has, you know, obviously been discussed quite a bit, playing wide receiver when he should be a lot of people felt he should be playing in the slot, using his big body, being closer to Darian. If you're the number one guy, if your body type fits and your skill set fits, then you should be playing inside, because now it's two things. One is you're closer. Two is that it suits you more. And three things, that's what he had success at when he was the Eastern Division's most outstanding player a year ago. But in the last month, I think that I know that Kavis and Anthony and all those involved have made a constructive effort to get him the ball. Concerted effort to get EJ the ball, and he hasn't produced. He's dropped a lot of balls. He hasn't been getting open. So in that regard, I think they tried, but he hasn't produced. And I think he's a good football player, and I think he'll hopefully have a bounce back year next year. But so yeah, I would go. That's one thing would be EJ, and then Sam Jaguar is. I've had it's a question about Sam as well, and that's kind of been just like, where has Sam Jaguar been? I don't know if talk about having someone who is not vocal or needs to be more vocal. I don't know if he needs to be more vocal, because not everyone has it in their makeup. But if I'm a guy who's supposedly one of the better, your better Canadian players, and a guy that should be a difference maker, and I make no difference at all. I'm not even seen on the field half the time. I'm gonna find a way to be seen. Whether that's pancake blocking someone, whether it's, I don't know what I have to do, but I'm gonna find a way to be seen. And Sam is another guy who I think has talent, but hasn't gotten opportunities for whatever reason that is, whether it's on him or it's on the scheme.
Yeah, there's no question. I've been pretty critical of Jaguar, and I just think that he's one person that's been, in my opinion, grossly underutilized. I say the dude's got muscles upon muscles, and he's lightning fast. Like, but you're still trying to make him into a receiver, and it just doesn't seem to be happening, or at least not happening with any great frequency. So, I mean, I would love to see the Alouettes convert him more into like a fullback or a running back, and sort of utilize that part, because I find the ground game is woefully underused. You're barely using Tyrell Sutton as it is. Brandon Rutley, I mean, God love the guy, but I mean, he's not anywhere on the field at any time, but you got to dress Canadian. So, I mean, why not put Jaguar to use in that sense? I mean, to me, I think that would make a lot more sense.
Tim, if you put Sam Jaguar at running back, you will be, if you're the GM of this team and you put Sam Jaguar as your running back, you will be fired in 30 seconds. You'd be fired after the game.
Oh, I'd never do that. Weird. No, there's no way in hell.
That was Cliffy. Yeah. That was Cliffy. Cliffy, I thought that was Tim, sorry. Cliffy, let's be clear. If you put Sam Jaguar at fullback or running back, you will get fired before the end of the first quarter whistle goes. I'll fire you.
Somebody actually
cannot break tackles. He cannot block. He cannot. I've never seen Sam Jaguar break a tackle since he's been in the league, so he's not playing running back, that's for damn sure.
Somebody made a good suggestion, I think it was on social media, Davis, where they said, why don't 1 week, I mean, we know what's left in the AL season, and obviously this may be a ratio issue, but what about activating both Rutley and Sutton for one game? See what happens if we can get both these dudes on the field at the same time.
I'll tell you why, and it is, I like the idea. The problem is we're getting down, this Devils team is down by, you know, 14 points, 10 points, 12 points, 18 points, and you can't run the ball over and over and over again when you're down that much and expect to come back in games when other teams are scoring. And from a roster standpoint, you just don't have enough roster flexibility to do that.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, and I get what, you know, you'd have to take him, if you're going to take out him, you'd have to sit down Steph Logan. So that's kind of that.
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
I mean, and also now, if you look at this team and how this team is built, you know, that's an example of people we don't need to figure out for next year. Like, you know, we already know that, you know, Brandon Rutley, Tyrell Sutton is the best player on this team, hands down, no doubt about it. I mean, from an offensive standpoint,
yeah.
I mean, he's the best player on this team. He has been from week one all the way through the end, and Brandon Rutley, you know, when he's been out there, he's been a stud as well. So those two guys are darn good, and I don't think that's one place you don't need to figure it out. So, you know, giving the ball those guys 100 times over the next 4 months or 4 weeks, all that's going to do is tire those guys out and not get a chance to see some of the positions that we need to figure out for moving forward. So I understand that if it was a playoff run somehow, maybe that's probably the best way to win, but not in this situation. You got to drop back and give Darian the ball 50 times, let him throw it, and see if he's going to come back and be the quarterback next year.
Okay, well, I mean, we've taken quite a bit of your time already, Davis. Just to sum things up, for Alouettes fans right now, obviously everybody's frustrated. Everybody's ticked off at the way things have turned out this season. There's a handful of games left. What can you sort of say for fans just to keep the faith? I know technically the Alouettes are still mathematically in the playoff hunt, as incredulous as that seems. What would you say to Alouettes fans to sort of keep the faith, so to speak? How would you do that?
Oh, I was pleading, you know, the other night before we finished the broadcast, a similar conversation, and that's just that, you know, we've been through, all of us who are fans of this team or this organization, we've been through a lot together over the last, you know, decade, or if you've been a Alouettes fan for 2 years or for 32 years, you've been through a lot of good times with this team. That we've always been a huge part of my life, and a lot of great wins and a lot of great people, and that doesn't change over, you know, one bad season or you know, two bad seasons. That doesn't change. It's frustrating for now, and you know, true fans, they stick with their squad, and they because they know it's going to get better, and the people, you know, in the organization, from the owners to the people at head office selling tickets to you know, promotions and marketing. Everybody involved is wants this organization to turn around and wants the team to turn around. So everyone's working, and you know, the players in the field are just, you know, a small part of that. They know that, and those pieces will change year in, year out. Just like I was there for a long time, and I'm gone, but the Owls organization is still there, and so, you know, hopefully they can make some improvements to the product on the field and next year and you know, get back to winning ways. And that's what I say is, you know, those things don't change, and we'll, you know, those of us that are fans and of this team will good days will return soon again. You know,
we can always hope. We need for those who may not know Davis, besides hearing your voice on the Owls broadcasts each week on the radio, where else can they hear or see you?
yeah, the main platform right now is I am the co-host of a show every week called CFL This Week, and that's the league's weekly show. It's called CFL This Week, and that's it's a live show. We do 3 o'clock Eastern every Wednesday, 3 o'clock Eastern. That's on we do that from the Twitter headquarters in Toronto here, and that's at the CFL's Twitter page. So go to @CFL on Twitter, @CFL at 3 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday, and that's me and Brody Lawson and Max Rosenberg, and we do this every week, and it's a good show, and we get into everything CFL. We talk Owls, we talk everything else as well. And then the Waggle podcast, me and James Stavolski, comes out every Wednesday as well. The Waggle, that's on iTunes, and that's the CFL's official podcast.
Very good.
And that's it. And I'm @DavisSanchez for everything else. Social media @DavisSanchez.
Perfect. Well, we really appreciate your time. We know you've been very busy with everything that you do each week. Again, as I said, we appreciate it. And if you ever have anything else to say, just Owls related, whether it be, just not on the league's official sites, we'll be more than willing to have you back again with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Keep doing what you're doing. And giving this content to Owls fans, and we as Owls fans appreciate it. And like I said, it's good times or bad times. We're always going to be Owls fans, and hopefully we get back to the good sooner than later.
All right, it's always darkest before dawn, right?
Thanks, guys.
Looking for something different from your snacks? Grab a bag of Bad Monkey popcorn. Bad Monkey popcorn is produced locally in Montreal in a number of mouth-watering flavors that will have your taste buds wanting more after just one kernel. Now available throughout Quebec in most major grocery stores, independent outlets, and selected cities across Canada. For more information, head to badmonkeypopcorn.com.
Hey folks, we appreciate your continued support of the Alouettes Flight Deck podcast. You can find all of our previous episodes over on Podbean. Just head to alouettesflightdeck.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play Music by searching the keywords Alouettes Flight Deck. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @AlouettesFLDeck and check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/AlouettesFlightDeck. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about the show, you can shoot us an email, alouettespodcast@gmail.com. Once again, thanks so much for listening.
It was a great interview. Once again, thanks for Dave for joining us with his busy schedule. The guy knows how to talk football, and it's very rare that I can feel like I don't know what to say sometimes. But that was one of those cases where I'm like, wow, the guy's just blowing me out of the water, and still one of the funniest things was him thinking I was you. You were me.
I guess when you spend enough time together, you start taking on each other's traits and everything like that. So maybe, maybe that's just what it is. I think we've become like, we're one and the same now. Hashtag podcaster problems.
Yeah, podcaster problems. So before we talk about the game itself and we finish up this podcast this week, finally the league was able to release the CFL Frenzy game for the for Android. Got my hands on it, as did you. I did, by the way, send out a message to their marketing team to let us know specifically what the power-ups do, because there's nothing in the game that actually mentions what the power-ups do and how many times you could use them, because I know you get them when you buy quote-unquote buy the pack of cards when you get points. So I'm curious to know what those mean, because I could see what they are, but how long do they last, etc. Overall gameplay, I find the game is fantastic. One thing I wish the league would do, two things, is to release, the pregame wallpapers that pops up, with the team logo and the team colors, Cliff.
Yep.
That they would release all of those to the fans. Secondly, I think that they should create a generic player, whether it be male or female, in the regular uniform with the number 16 on it, and release that to the fans. A larger, high-quality version, because you can promote the league, promote the team, promote the game, etc. So that's one of the things I would suggest that they do. Now, gameplay in itself is fairly simple. It's
you know, I was talking to my brother about it, and he says, well, he was like, it's like overtime. I go, yeah, you're right. It's overtime, you know, maximum three times. And it's very simplistic. I find that depending on who you pass to can make a huge difference, because, you know, obviously, Cliff, when you pass to the star, the yellow line, you're passing to yourself.
Yep.
But there are other players there. It's just a matter of trying to figure it out. After you figure out the waggle and then you do the snap, it's just a matter of where you're going to pass to. Mm-hmm. Running, in my opinion, running, I think, is one of the easiest things that you can do in this game. And I think you could run all day. Don't know if you can with the other teams. Maybe it depends on who you have as your running back. But I think running, at least as far as being an Alouettes running back, I think it's very simplistic. And you could win every single game just by running. That's my opinion.
It's true. That they really got it down, because, and again, I'm trying not to bag on the team, but I found myself playing, passing was not great because I had Darian Durant as my quarterback. Whereas, like you said, the running game was pretty good because Tyrell Sutton was good. And even when I run off tackle, I still do good. So
yeah.
I kind of get now why the Alouettes want to keep running their star running back off tackle.
Well, that's just the AI. I find I'm okay with passing. I'm okay with passing. So it's I don't have any – let's put it this way. Most of the games that I have won, as far as I am along there, Cliff, and as soon as I finally figured it out, I have the maximum 16 points before I can win. I rarely go to the third try between the teams. Basically, I guess third try would be sudden death if you're tied. So, yeah, I think there are a few quirks. I think it's a very good start. I'm curious to know if they have any updates based on feedback, et cetera, and what they do from there. But, you know, kudos to the league. I was able to play it. It's a fun game. It's just a matter of, you know, when I run through the schedule, will I play as another team and see how I do? I probably will. Because I think at most that if you're really good in the game, Cliff, the most you'll get is 16 points and you won't go to the next level. You won't have to go to the next round. You'll win the game. I think it's just the AI is just not... There are some issues with the AI.
Yeah. No, it's a terrific game. Like I said, great time killer. It's something that's simple enough that anybody can pretty much pick it up instantly. Like you said, there's a few quirks with the AI here and there, but I think you'll find that with most video games in general. Like, but once you get it down, once you really understand it, I mean, it's just an absolutely fun game. And the fact that it feels authentic,
yes,
too.
Yes, I agree.
Even though like these are like cartoon caricatures, so to speak, of these real-life CFL players, just the fact that you are actually playing as your favorite team and not some carbon copy or just generic name or something like that. Like, the fact that you're actually playing as the Montreal Alouettes or the Ottawa Red Blacks, and you actually are using players like Bo Levi Mitchell and Mike Riley, really, really cool. I think the league really hit a home run with this particular effort. And it can only get better. That's the thing I love about it. Is really good to start, and there's still room to get better with it. So my hat's off to the league. I really hope that they see all the positivity, because I haven't really seen too much negative about this game from anyone on the on social media or anything like that. So obviously it's not perfect, and obviously if you're not really much of a gamer, of course you're going to struggle a little bit with things here and there. But I'd say by and large, people really get behind this game. They really seem to enjoy it, and lots of people have even been switching their Twitter profile pics to characters that they've created in the game itself. So, I mean, that's pretty telling right there.
Exactly.
So, I mean, people are really getting behind something like this, which is not only good for the league, but also good for the fans as well, so that they have something that really helps connect them even more to this league. Something as simple as a video game can do that, that's pretty outstanding.
Yeah. No, it's true. And, again, it's if you haven't downloaded it already, it's already on the iTunes and on the Android Play Store, and I think you have a better option of downloading it with Android, because I have heard that there are some issues depending on which iOS version that you're running currently on your iPad or your iPhone. So it's good game. Thanksgiving Day game. You and I will be sitting. If anybody wants to come and see us, we will be on the south side, 55-yard line, the third row, so the one right behind the seats that have the seat backs and the armrests, we'll be there. The question is, Cliff, are we going incognito, or are we going to be ourselves? Because I was thinking of wearing a paper bag.
Yes, you did mention that. I believe that was one of your finer tweets this past weekend, was the call to arms, if you will, yes, to get 20,000 paper bags for everyone in attendance to wear. Just
great giveaway.
To show that.
Great giveaway.
I tell you, whatever grocery store wants to jump on board with this idea, I mean, think of the publicity, right? There's no such thing as bad publicity, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's just, you know, I don't think it's ever, I don't think I've ever seen it for expos, maybe. I don't think I've ever seen it for the Owls, but it's just been, it's just that bad. And hey, what better way to get ourselves on television?
I suppose that would be one way.
Yeah, when we're taping the show, currently the Lions are not out, which kind of makes sense anyways. But I joked around and I said, even though going into this game, and we're still waiting from our friend Steve Dano to try to find out the stat. Going into the game, it's a combined 13 games that these two teams have lost. Edmonton's going in 6, Montreal coming in with 7 straight losses. We're trying to find out if there is if there are any more where there are teams where are 5+. We've come across some where there's more than 13, but we'll leave it at that. We'll see what the league can come out with. But even though that they've lost 6 straight, Cliff, I've said this already, I'd not surprise me that when the Lions do first come out, that the Alouettes will be an underdog by at least 10 points at home.
And that's with Edmonton with all of their woes right now, because during their 6-game streak, they've had numerous injuries. They've had injuries all year, and they've had so many guys on the 6-game list that are only now starting to come off. And despite that, they're still having a hard time just getting something put together, because they've had a couple of heartbreaking losses, and it's got to be tough for them too, because they started out the year so strong, starting out with 7 victories, and now going into Montreal this Thanksgiving on a 6-game losing streak, it's incredible. And even more incredible, John Chick, who was just traded to the Eskimos a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I know.
He was part of the 0-8 Tiger Cats to start 2017. And when he got traded to the Eskimos, everybody thought, oh, well, this is great. He's going to finally start playing for a good team. That's when they started losing. John Chick has not won a game in 2017.
That's bad.
That's incredible.
He's starting to rival the 1994 Shreveport Pirates.
I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before. And I kind of had a joke with Andrew over at the Eskimo Empire. I said, don't feel bad, your losing streak's going to come to an end October 9th. And he replied quickly with, no, you guys are going to win. I promise you that. Like, if you can imagine, like, 2 podcast hosts are openly openly predicting that the other team is going to win. If you can imagine, like, just to give you an idea of just how crazy things are in both Edmonton and Montreal, that's where we're at right now. If I'm predicting the Eskimos are going to win and he's predicting the Alouettes are going to win, something's definitely not right.
It looks like Durant's going to be starting. I don't know how much of a leash he's going to have. Yes, it is true in the history that Edmonton coming out west and playing here in Montreal, they have not done very well. They have not done very well in Montreal. So is it a positive? I mean, we try to look at anything. You know, yes, the streak was broken last week, quote unquote broken last week. I think it just depends on, you know, I'm trying to look at anything positive here, Cliff. I really am. I'm trying. Well,
I know you are. And believe me, there are positives to this team, believe it or not. I mean,
let's put it this way. And I'm actually... Where are my win loss records here? Not as of late. I mean, grand total here, I mean, it's Edmonton's 2016 and 2 in Montreal in their history. But since 96, we know it's a lot. But the thing is, Edmonton's won the last 3 here.
Yes, they have.
So the last time that they played was Thanksgiving last year.
Yep, and we got to see a burgeoning young superstar in Brandon Zylstra have himself a breakout game. And I have no doubt that Mike Riley will be targeting him, as well as the returning Darrell Walker, Adarius Bowman. I mean, he's got the weapons for sure. Like, you take a look at these teams, and there's so many parallels. I mean, you've got elite quarterbacks, or at least one of them definitely is where one's supposed to be. You got talented receivers. And actually now, as of today, Edmonton finally got themselves a solid running back, trading for C.J. Gable with Hamilton Tiger Cats.
For two neg players. I'm like, what?
Yeah, that's
to me that's a worse trade than the S.J. Green trade.
Oh, nothing's that bad.
For two neg players who may never be signed? At least the Owls got draft picks.
Well, supposedly it's a salary dump in Hamilton, so can't help but wonder if that also means Zach Kolaros will find a home before the October 11th trading deadline.
That's a good question too. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, well, what about Montreal?
Yeah, say, like, ladies and gentlemen, your new starting quarterback, number beep, Zach Kolaros.
Well, and I'm sure a lot of people say, well, salary cap. Like, well, if you release a certain number four and trade to get another number four, things could happen, no?
Anything's possible in the CFL. Or if D squared gets placed on the sixth game.
That's true. Your salary doesn't count when you're on the sixth game. And
there's another way of doing it right there.
And I tell you, it would just be one of those things. One of those things that would just be so delightfully CFL.
Yes.
Question is, if we were to pull the trigger on a shocking move like that, is it really worth giving up? Or would Hamilton be so desperate to cut salary that they'd almost do a CJ Gable-like trade for Kolaros to Montreal? Like maybe for a couple of negless players or a couple of draft picks, would they be willing to just sort of cut bait with him?
I don't know. We'll find out.
I think it would be a horrendous mistake, but it's pretty clear that Zach Kolaros will not be a Hamilton Tiger Cat after 2017. Where does he end up? Where can he go? And again, as you take a look at the struggles Montreal has had, and maybe it's just not such a crazy idea to see history repeat itself, because don't forget, many moons ago, Hamilton had a struggling quarterback that they kind of just let leave, cast aside. He ended up in Montreal, and the rest, as they say, is history. Could lightning strike twice in the same place? I guess we'll see.
We'll find out, and you know what? I think that's the best way to finish the show.
On a cliffhanger.
That's good. Cliffhanger. That's remember, send all hate mail to Cliff. So
bring it.
We will be back next week. We do hope that you enjoy your Thanksgiving. Be safe, and from everybody here at the Alouettes Flight Deck family, our thoughts and prayers are with everybody in the horrible thing that happened not only in Edmonton but also what happened in Las Vegas. We can all hope for a better world. That's all we can do, is we can hope for a better world. So for everybody here at the Alouettes Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.